And welcome to the show, everybody. Mike Rayford here. You're listening to In Search of the Good Life Show. We're here every Saturday from 2 to 4, depending on where you are in the world, as a matter of fact, because we do broadcast this live on MikeTheWineGuy.com. So as most of my listeners, you've discovered, you can hear us on the web anytime you want to. Just click on the Listen Live button. Again, it's MikeTheWineGuy.com. Joining us today, we've got Kevin Evans. He's from the Napa Valley Life magazine. As I mentioned to you guys before, a lot of the folks we have on the show are entrepreneurs, people that have sort of decided to really follow their passion and their dream in life. And this is a great story. We're going to hear from him coming up. He's in Austin, Texas right now, but he's got a magazine called Napa Valley Life. I think he gets around a little bit like I do. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mike. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So tell us about what you're up to right now in Austin, Texas. I mean, that's kind of an interesting thing. You must be traveling a bit to have a magazine out in Napa, but also be living in Napa, Austin, Texas.
Yeah, it keeps me a little busy. We actually have several publications scattered around the country, and obviously Napa is my favorite. It's a fun place to go and just a fantastic, fantastic group of people out there.
Absolutely. So, well, as I always like to do, I like to dissect a little bit into people's background. You haven't always been a publisher. What did you start off doing? Were you like a mechanic, an airplane mechanic, or were you a doctor? I mean, a policeman? What was your sort of background?
I was a dreamer. I actually, I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan, and that's kind of where I got my start. In college, I became the editor of the college newspaper there called the Michigan Journal at the University of Michigan Dearborn. And basically, publishing never left my blood. Right from there, I joined an organization called Auto Trader and traveled the country fixing operations or launching them. I went from Detroit to Raleigh, from Raleigh to Houston, and then from Houston to Hartford, where I launched a publication on behalf of them there. I then left that organization and moved to Los Angeles, worked for a company called Recycler, which was then bought by the LA Times, which was then bought by the Chicago Tribune. Left that organization, moved to Austin to work for another publishing company, and then I just decided to start my own publishing company after leaving them. I was a little tired of making everybody else money, and I was tired of the politics. I was tired of moving around, and just decided to launch a relocation guide back in 2001 from my garage.
Wow, sounds like a great, great trip. Yeah, so your background is in publishing, but you decided to not just be an employee anymore. You went out and did your own thing. And what about the Napa scene? I mean, obviously, you must enjoy wine and that whole scene out there. In fact, I'm going this weekend. I'm going to be doing some things down there during this next week. Looking forward to it. The weather's really perfect and everything right now. But when did you get introduced to Napa? How did that happen? That'd be a fun story.
Well, you know, I had never been to Napa in my life. I always wanted to go. And I was at a publishing conference in San Diego and met the owner of the publication there, listened to her speak and realized that she had some issues that I could help her with, and we had the bandwidth to do. So I approached her and asked if she was interested in selling or partnering. She was very interested in partnering, and we basically got together. My partner and I, Derek Wright, fantastic partner to have, just very knowledgeable. We decided to buy the controlling rights to the publication, keeping the former owner aboard. And just recently, we bought her out. So now it's just Derek and I running the magazine.
Well, that's cool. You know, there's a lot in common with what I'm doing here with a radio show and a blog. It's a lot about, really, it's about content, really, isn't it?
You know, it's about delivering to the audience what they want. I always tell people I'm not a smart person. I just listen to everybody else and just select those ideas that make sense. And that's been very successful for us. It's a lot of market research. Just listen. If people open up and listen, you'd be surprised what kind of information and suggestions that you can garner. And then you just apply the ones that make sense. It's basically, business 101. Listen, in the market will tell you what to do.
No, I love that. That's my philosophy as well. Don't go out and try to force something on someone. Just let them find out what it is they want and then deliver it well. Now, I'm on your website right now. I invite anybody that's out there to go check it out, NapaValleyLifeMagazine.com. And it talks about you guys and the team and if people want to get a subscription and all that. But a lot of the topics that you've got on the nav bar are really cool. There's places to, links to eat and drink, whether it's wine, food, and recipes and restaurant guides. There's also different events calendars that you've got. It's really a fully loaded thing for anybody that wants to go to Napa or that lives around the area and goes there frequently, right?
Yeah, you know, what we try to do is we try to keep people in touch with what's happening in Napa. We try to introduce them to new wines or wineries or wine experiences, events. In fact, I was just out in Napa last week, returned on Sunday, and I try to meet as many people as I can out there, but there was a great event out there, the Taste of Hollow Mountain, that had 46 wineries there. And so I was able to meet quite a few people there, but those are the kind of events that we want to get out to the public. So when they're going to Napa or planning their next trip to Napa, we can be a valuable resource for that. So that's really our goal, is to keep people up to date on what's happening in Napa and maybe introduce some new experiences or wines to them.
Well, that's great. Now, when you're out there at Howell Mountain, did you happen to run into Delia Viader?
No, I did not, but I was at Viader. Was it Friday we stopped by there?
Yeah.
So it's a great view up there. I love that place.
Yeah, she's been on the show. I'm going to go see her next week in Napa as well. But yeah, beautiful spot. She's got a great story too. I mean, she moved up there as a single mom, blew up rocks out of the vineyard and just planted it and stuff like that. So pretty cool story from her. Oh, what do you see, since you're fairly new in Napa, I guess you really haven't seen a lot of the changes over time, but one of the things that I notice, whether it's the people that are living there and that are quote unquote from there, or people that are sort of frequent visitors like myself, there's sort of a reverence for the history and the sort of the backstory of Napa itself. It's kind of an interesting thing that once you're there, you feel like you're immersed in a really neat story about the history of wine and agriculture in Northern California.
Yeah, there's some fantastic stories out there. And every time I go out there and meet with folks, there's a new interesting story. I don't know if you've been to Caldwell at all, but the fantastic story that he has. John is just one of the most colorful people I've met. He's just a joy, and he has a great, great story that I can't do it justice, but it's something that I encourage people to look up that story. And it's just, he's a true rebel and a true pioneer in Napa.
Well, I'll have to go look him up. Maybe you could introduce me via an email or something like that. I'm going to be interviewing a bunch of guys and girls over there this summer as we go forward. So maybe that could be one of my on my list. Well, listen, we're going to take a real short break here, Kevin, but I want to ask you to stick around because when we come back, I want to talk about like what's a day in the life look like in Napa and how we can sort of help some people figure out what they want to do as they're planning their next Napa trip. We're talking with Kevin Evans right now of Napa Valley Life. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. You're listening to In Search of the Good Life show. I'm Mike Rayford. Stick around. And welcome back to the show, everybody. Mike Rayford here. We're on the line with Kevin Evans of the magazine called Napa Valley Life. It's also available online like everything is these days, NapaValleyLifeMagazine.com. If you are planning a trip anytime in the near future or you're just dreaming of a trip and you just want to sort of get your wet your whistle, as they say, to get some ideas flowing, with you and your friends and your family, definitely worth checking out this magazine. It's got everything from where to eat and what wineries to visit, as well as just all kinds of other activities going on in the Napa Valley region. Of course, there's a lot of heavy writing and heavy coverage for the wines and the wineries there as well, including even social life and fun events, including Bottle Rock and a bunch of other things that are going on there. But Kevin's joining us back again. Kevin, thanks so much for sticking around. I wanted to get an idea of what you think. You know, like what does a typical trip in Napa look like for you or for, say, the average reader? I know that's kind of a broad question because it varies depending on what your interests are. But how would you sort of paint a picture for someone that's looking for a day in the life there?
Well, my trips to Napa are not going to be typical of somebody else going to Napa to visit. My time is pretty tight out there. It's scheduled pretty tight. I don't have a lot of downtime. So my recommendation for somebody going out to Napa is do not do more than four wineries in a day. I think a great idea is plan ahead, have three wineries, set in for a nice lunch and a fantastic dinner, because there's some fantastic places to eat and drink out there. And you don't want to really overdo it to the point that you can't enjoy a nice dinner. And I think a lot of people, and I've done this myself, when I first went out there, try to do five wineries in a day and then a little taste at the end. And it's, yeah. It's difficult. It's difficult to do, because then you're not enjoying the evening as much as you could. A lot of the wineries don't serve past 4 or 5 o'clock. They won't take appointments past that. So they can kind of help you curtail that. But I suggest getting with a limo driver or a transportation service. Tell them what you're looking for. If you've never been out there before, they're going to ask you what type of experience you want. If you want a high-end experience and fantastic wines, or do you want a few, are you looking for value wines? Because a lot of wineries expect you to purchase wine when you go there. So just know that that's part of the program. And I do encourage you to buy some wine out there. They can ship it back to you, or you can get, like I go out there with a suitcase called Vingard Valise, which holds 12 bottles of wine. I take it out there empty and come back with it full. So you can do that. But I go out there 5-6 times a year, so I get a lot of use out of mine. But I definitely suggest having an idea of what kind of experience you want, and then follow that. Stay at a nice hotel. Last time I was out there, I stayed at the Archer, for example, and they had a beautiful rooftop bar that I was able to decompress at the end of each evening with a nice fire pit and a great view up there. So I definitely advise having a plan going into it.
I couldn't have said it better. One of the things that I've seen over time is, you know, people feel like they're in a hurry, and it's partly because you work all week or all month or all year, and you finally get that little time to go slip into Napa, and you want to hurry up and do everything. But you're right, more than three in a day, it's not only difficult to sort of handle, but it's just like, it's just too much input, because you want to sort of spend some time winding down, getting to know the staff, getting to know the winemaker. 9 times out of 10, once you get to talking with somebody that's working there, they'll take you and show you some little, you know, nook or cranny or some special little feature of the place, and it becomes an experience. So it's not just like, let's hurry up and go on the next ride at Disneyland. It sort of takes some time. Enjoy it. Exactly.
Because each tasting is going to last you an hour and a half to 2 hours. So I say allocate 2 hours for each tasting, just to give you some cushion, and then travel time. And you still have to get some food in there for lunch.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. So, you know, I hear people a lot. It's sort of one of those mixed bag responses when you talk about Napa with the circle of people that I'm around a lot. And I do a lot of wine tasting events and so forth. So people will have sort of a mixed review, I suppose, of Napa. But from an outsider's point of view, how do you see Napa? I mean, some people think it's just too crowded and it's too expensive, and other people think it's just the perfect spot to go and chill on the weekend. What's your take on it?
You know, Napa, I'm relatively new to the experience, but what I compare Napa to is the same thing that happened in Las Vegas. A lot of the wineries are focusing in on the experience now, as opposed to just moving a catacall of people through their winery. So they're very focused on that intimate experience with each and every guest, which I think is a smart move, because people want the experience now. They want that intimate relationship with the winemaker and the wine. And the winemakers know if they can provide that, then they're going to have advocates for them for a long time. They're going to go out and tell that story to other people. So it's a way for them to market. But Napa is also interesting in that they are a very tight-knit community. Everybody in Napa knows each other. They help each other, and they will never turn on each other. It's really an interesting dynamic there, but I really love it there just for that reason. It's a lot of great relationships with each other, and they'll make other recommendations to you too. It's not like they will down talk another winery or another winemaker. Yeah. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful to see.
It really is. There's very few industries. In fact, I can't really think of any that are that cooperative with each other. It's really inspiring in so many ways. And I suppose really the locals themselves, they don't necessarily look down on you because you're a visitor there. They're kind of more welcoming than you'd expect sometimes. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. I think they really go out of the way to make you feel welcome there and appreciated.
Yeah. I really like that vibe they've got. Well, listen, let's just talk a little bit about wine. I'm going to a rosé. It's an international rosé competition that's already finished, but this is going to be their gala event where they're showing off all the gold. So summertime is obviously rosé time, but in Napa, it's every kind of wine time all the time. So as far as, you know, people being exposed to different wines and stuff like that, and you especially, like, where did you sort of start up and now have you ended up? If you're taking 12 bottles of wine home 5 times a year, you must have developed your palate nicely along the way.
It is definitely growing. I'm a converted beer guy. When I first, you know, my first wine I had back in Raleigh, I got a case of cake bread and I loved that. But I kind of fell away from wine for a while. And when we acquired the magazine in Napa, I had to become and do a lot of market research, as I call it. And my tastes have evolved. And the problem with once you're exposed to nicer wines, you can't go backwards. It's literally impossible to go back to inexpensive wines. And some people think that's a wine snob. It's just not. Your taste and palate has just adjusted so much. And I find when I first went out to Napa, I loved Mount Veeder. I love the volcanic taste that came along with the, you know, the grapes that grew in that area. Mm-hmm. Now I've shifted to Howell Mountain and Diamond Mountain. I find that their wines lay down a lot nicer. So I still find myself cab focused. I love Cabernet. I love a nice big bold cab, but then I could sit and have a nice little Merlot if I want something a little softer.
Sure.
So I think it depends on what I'm eating now. I was never so focused. Now I decant wines for 3-4 hours. Before I drink them, I never did that before. So I become a lot more conscious of what all those elements do to the taste of wine and how it enhances the flavor of the experience.
So you're into the Howell Mountain dust, as they say.
Yeah. There's some fantastic, fantastic wines that come out of that region.
There really are. ABA. Yeah, there really are. And the thing about Howell Mountain, which is so distinctive, I've finally gotten to the point now where at least a couple of times out of, say, 2 or 3 times out of 5, I can sort of feel confident about picking a Howell Mountain cab out of some others that are from different parts of the region or different parts of the world, because it definitely has that sort of soft, velvety tannins thing going on with it. It's really, really special. So,
well, and they lay down really well.
Oh yeah, and that's another thing. There's a lot more listeners these days, and just folks that are out there visiting, whether they listen to the show or not, but they're out there collecting. And it's not so much that they're collecting for, you know, 20, 30 years down the road or for investment necessarily. It's just that it's fun, especially when you speak with a winemaker and he tells you, gosh, you know, this is my 2012 cab and it's 7 years old right now. But if you hold on to it for another 4 or 5 years, you're going to notice it's even, you know, more coalesced, it's nicer, et cetera. And it's fun to get a case sometimes and just sort of try one or two bottles a year and just sort of kind of keep track of the difference that same vintage will sort of progress over the time.
Yeah, I'm the same way. If I get a wine, I typically don't want less than 3. I think 3 is the minimum number you should get of any wine, because you can lay 2 of them down. If you get that urge to open one quickly, you can share it with friends. And then you still have 2 more, one that you'll lay down for a lot longer and the other one you'll open probably in a couple of years after that. So that's just my advice, is get minimum 3, 4, 5, or 6 are optimal.
Yeah, I agree. Well, listen, this has been a blast. I'm excited to dig into your magazine as we progress through the summer and sort of have it help me along with figuring out some of my stuff. And I might even drop you an article or two along the way, since I'm out there clicking and writing and interviewing people along the way. Maybe we can share a little content.
Yeah, please do. Please do, for sure.
That'd be fun. All right. Well, Kevin Evans, Napa Valley Life. Tell people how they can find you other than Napa Valley Life magazine. I guess that's the best way, right?
Yeah, NapaValleyLife.com. We're on Instagram, Twitter, but I would start with our website. And all that information is there. And subscribe to it. Yeah, we're very inexpensive, and it's some really good data and information.
Very good. All right, Kevin, thanks so much for joining us today on the show. Really appreciate it. Stick around, everybody. We got a lot more coming up. Mike Rayford here in search of the good life. We'll be right back. Stick around.